Welcome to Interviews for Resistance. Since election night 2016, the streets of the US have rung with resistance. People all over the country have woken up with the conviction that they must do something to fight inequality in all its forms. But many are wondering what it is they can do. In this series, we'll be talking with experienced organizers, troublemakers, and thinkers who have been doing the hard work of fighting for a long time. They'll be sharing their insights on what works, what doesn't, what has changed, and what is still the same. I am Sarah Jaffe, your host. Across the country last week, immigrants went on strike to demonstrate what the country would be like if Donald Trump actually followed through on his promised deportations. The Day Without an Immigrant actions kicked off in Wisconsin on Monday, February 13th, where Voces de la Frontera and partner organizations held a Day Without Latinos, Immigrants, and Refugees to protest Milwaukee Sheriff David Clark's plans to collaborate with the Trump administration to deport people. German Sanchez was one of the workers who went on strike that day.
My name is German Sanchez. I'm a farm worker, and also I'm volunteer and member from some organizations like Voces de la Frontera Milwaukee, United for a Better Future from Frog Cities, and Casa Esther in the Winnebago County in Wisconsin.
All right. And so tell us about the big Day Without an Immigrant last Monday.
Well, it was a big, big day for all immigrants in the state. We organized our community to be ready to against this 287G, the program that Sheriff Clark wants to run in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. It was so important to educate our community and the rest of the state that this issue is not just for Milwaukee. It can be grow up in the rest of the state. So yeah. That's why it was so important for the people support and help our people in Milwaukee. So it was a big day. Everything it was clean. I mean, not arrested, not warning. So we got a big, big day to show for the state and the country that in Wisconsin, we are organized and ready to fight if we have to.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about 287G. What would it do?
Well, 287G is kind of the program to the communities secure. Mm-hmm. And it's the same program the Sheriff Joe Arpaio used in Arizona. So mm-hmm. That's why. And that's why the people are so concerned about it, because everybody knows the history about Arpaio.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why it's a concern us to be awake in those letters, those numbers.
And so talk about. Obviously, this was a local particular issue, but obviously Donald Trump is president now. So can you talk a little bit about how things have changed with Donald Trump as president?
Well, yes, a lot of things change. As a farm worker, mm-hmm. Before that, I mean, well, the work is the same.
Yeah.
The work is the same hard work and whatever. But so right now we got this motor out there for executive orders and politician issues. So some things are true, some things are false. Of course, some TV channels use some information, and it's not clear for the community. So
yeah.
So right now it was really hard. I mean, and I'm not talking about the job. I'm talking about the atmosphere that you can feel, that you can smell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Talk a little bit about the organizing that went into last Monday's action. How long did that take to come together?
Well, we take like maybe 8 days, 9 days, maybe. The thing that I do, I use social media to educate my community and what's wrong.
Yeah.
And we spread out the message, and we try to be as much clear that we can for they understand the consequences.
Right.
And of course, for them to understand our options also.
Yeah. Yeah. I was also told that last year you guys also had a successful strike against state legislation against immigrants. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, actually, the last year we got kind of like a little more days, maybe one day extra. Mm-hmm. Not really too many days, but yeah, we're working so hard. I mean, and I'm talking about since 6-7 a.m. until midnight every day, because like me, I need to organize a lot of people in the farms. Mm-hmm. Workers, friends, family, some contacts and social media. So yeah, we work so hard, but again, we make amazing logistics, and we work so hard. I mean, there's a lot of people that really are working on it and organize and educate. The work and these things, the words are educate, organize, and be ready.
Yeah, talk a little bit more about the work you do organizing on the farms. I imagine that can be kind of hard to reach that many people.
It's hard because, of course, I had to do my work too. But right. in my lunch break, mm-hmm. I make the emails or text message. When I'm done my day, I make a video to tell them, let's talk about last year.
Yeah.
Last year, a lot of people don't know how works the Capitol in Madison. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people don't know how works the law. Even some American people don't know.
Yeah.
So my point is, I educate myself. I talk to some lawyers. I talk to some person about what is the AB 450? What does it mean SB 533?
Yeah.
So all those things that I'm learning about it, I spread up, of course, in Spanish for my community.
Right.
They understand what is the levels of law moving in the Capitol, and what is our options to do and against those bills and immigrants. So this is the hard part, to educate the people and understand those bills. It was hard. It was hard. So I do videos maybe twice a day to talking about that. And of course, I answer text message back. I answer back emails. I mean, all the emails, a lot of questions, a lot of concerns. And of course, a lot of people are so concerned about the consequences to don't go to work, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, with those anti-immigrants bills, it's easy. You can last one day in your work.
Yeah.
But if the bill's moving, you can't last everything.
Since you've been organizing in Wisconsin while Scott Walker has been in charge, has been attacking unions and all of this, what are some lessons that other people in other states can take from the work you've been doing?
Well, this is the thing. Obviously, the politicians, they do their job.
Right.
So if you are not agree with something, you have to organize. You have to show whatever is in your hands to ask for a chance and make the difference. I mean, like us, you are right. A lot of people, we are not able to be really part of the politicians because for some reasons. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that I don't have to, or I'm not able to educate myself in politician issues. Of course, I am.
Yeah.
And I feel that because I live here. I live in Wisconsin.
Right.
And I live here for the last 10 years. And
yeah.
I love this state. I love my neighbors. I love what I'm doing in the farm.
Yeah.
And the same years that I have here, I'm working on the same farm. So that thing tells you something.
Yeah.
But your question is just like this. If you don't like what's wrong, try to make the difference. But organize is the word.
Yeah. And then finally, people are now planning for a nationwide day without an immigrant on May 1st. Can you tell us about the organizing you guys are doing going forward?
Well, we're talking about that the last Monday in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
We We got the meeting that day and the night in Milwaukee, and I got some meetings with some people here in the Fox Valley by Alpton, Green Bay. We had to show our power in the economy, because again, we are not able to make difference in politicians deals, but of course we live here, we make money here, and we spend money here.
Right.
So we are really spread out the message for our community and be ready in the best way possible. I mean, we are not talking about going and make noises for nothing. No, we got idea. We got a logistic. Last year, it was the same than this year. Not problems, not issues. Everybody goes back to home safe. The last year, the Capitol, it was clean after we leave.
Yeah.
Last Monday, Milwaukee, the courthouse, it was clean when we leave in. So yeah. Those are the message that we try to send it out for the country and the state. We are hard workers. We are a family oriented too,
yeah.
And we share a lot of the same values as Americans. So this is our big challenge. Let the people know that we are part of their neighbors, or we are part of their communities.
Wonderful. Anything else that you want people to know?
Well, just so you know, all the time when you drink a milk, if it comes from Wisconsin, whatever, any people working in those farms, where their milk that comes from, they're working happy and they love what they do. So, but that doesn't mean they are not organizing. That doesn't mean we are not really concerned about what's wrong in the country. We're concerned about it. And, well, we take care of families as best as we can, and we appreciate our neighbors. And, yeah, we'll keep working on it.
I also spoke with Christine Newman-Ortiz, Executive Director of Voces de la Frontera, for some background on the day's actions.
Hello, my name is Christine Newman-Ortiz, Executive Director of Voces de la Frontera.
Voces de la Frontera had a really massive Day Without an Immigrant last week. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yes, we had on Monday, February 13th, Day Without Latinos, Immigrants, and Refugees. And it was a statewide event where we called a community-wide general strike that involved a work stoppage, small business closures, consumer day of boycott, and just mass protest and mobilization that convened in Milwaukee. And the reason for that was to demonstrate our deep opposition to the program 287G. Sheriff Clark from Milwaukee County had declared that he wants to enter into this program. This program is a key piece of Trump's executive order on immigration that is part of the structure of setting up a mass deportation program and legalizing discrimination in the United States. This program would allow local law enforcement to become immigration agents. They would be able to profile someone without any basis of having committed anything, and interrogate them and put them in deportation proceedings. It's a program that can be quickly lifted up, and Trump's plan is to get 70 different local entities to buy into that program in his first year. It's a program that was highly discredited, famously by Sheriff Arpaio in Maricopa County.
Right.
And so it's a very discredited program that has found to violate people's constitutional rights and civil rights. It also was a mass protest against the executive order as a whole,
right,
really using our collective economic power to demonstrate the positive economic contributions immigrants make to our economy.
Right. And so tell me a little bit about the organizing that went into getting that day together, because the video of those marches was just incredible.
Well, we had have done similar actions in the past. The first Day Without Latinos and Immigrants, as people recall, was in 2006, which Milwaukee in that case was the third city to go out in a mass wave of mass protests and mass general strikes and business closures. So that was really the first one that really birthed the modern immigrant rights movement. And it at the time, the protests were directed against a pending bill by Congressman Sensenbrenner from Wisconsin that was quickly moving through Congress and was going to be signed by President Bush that would have turned immigrant being undocumented into an aggravated felony, and anyone who knew someone who about their status and didn't turn them in would also be, you know, face criminal charges. And so that first action really defeated that, and then, you know, kind of brought us back to a discussion on immigration reform. That was the first one, but ever since then, we've actually, this last one was really our sixth general strike of Day Without Latinos. It's something that we don't call all the time because there is great sacrifice that goes with it, great financial sacrifice, the threat of potential threat of retaliation. You know, you have moms who have children who depend on their paycheck who participate in these actions.
Right.
So it really has been a strategy that BOLSA has used. This year will be the sixth time that we've used it, and it has been an important tool of the immigrant rights movement to defend itself at a very critical juncture. This year, what was unique about this year, and we only organized it 10 days out when from the time that Clark declared that he was going to bring this in, because this is a program that can be set up so quickly. So we only had 10 days to get the word out, and we did that through through different chapters, you know, running through online organizing, through flyers. We the most critical step, I would say, is in any of these occasions has been that we actually bring that proposal for that call to action to our own membership, and in some cases to a much broader community-wide presence, so that people can inform us about, it's like a temperature check.
Yeah.
If people think the call to action, we're kind of like a watchdog.
Yeah.
So it's like, do we believe the threat is high enough that it would warrant such a strong action? And it's only been on that basis that we move forward. And so it resonated even beyond voices. It resonated around the country.
Right.
And we know that on February 16th, really through a very spontaneous online call to action, did we see that strategy roll out similarly in other cities. And I would say that immigrant workers have an inherent understanding of what their power is as, you know, as part of the workforce, and small business owners know, immigrant business owners know how much they contribute to taxes and in job creation, and that, and people, you know, and just people as consumers, that, you know, the way that we're being characterized is, you know, discriminatory, and it actually, and it's a lie that immigrants contribute more and should be treated with respect and be thanked for their contributions, and we should be making life easier for them. So people, when there's that inherent understanding, and when people act in a very collective way, we've seen that it actually can make an impact in an otherwise political situation where there isn't a political answer, through demonstrating the force of our collective economic power.
I want to actually go back to the Sensenbrenner bill, because of course, as you said, Sensenbrenner was from Wisconsin, so that probably made it kind of personal for people in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the three examples, I mean, I would say there's been four examples where we've used the Day Without Latinos and Immigrants. I mean, it's been six times, but I would say four times where you could really see the weight of it have a direct impact. obviously in 2006, as part of that whole national wave of general strikes and mass protests, obviously the Sensenbrenner bill was defeated. Sensenbrenner was demoted. Only now recently in the Trump administration has he been gotten promoted again. He's now on the immigration subcommittee. And and then immigration reform was, you know, back on the, you know, as part of the national conversation. So obviously that was a huge victory, not just for immigrants so much of like, but for democracy itself, because attorneys would have been, if you're an attorney and undocumented workers have legal rights, for example, if someone tries to cheat you out of your wages. And, under national labor law, it doesn't matter if an employer tries to use immigration status against you as a way to not pay you, because obviously that incentivizes hiring more undocumented people and taking advantage of them. So that's why the law is very strong in that. But, you know, labor attorneys, if you, again, under any context, that law would have said if you don't turn somebody in, it would have been family, friends, priests. Teachers, our own organization, it was really a draconian bill, very Trump-like, threatened our democracy itself. And so it was a very important win, not just for immigrants, but for our democracy here in the United States. And the second one where I would say we also had a big impact was later on in 2011. It wasn't felt as much because it was on a weekend, but it was in the context of the Act 10, when there was the very spontaneous upswell of rank and file union members against the repeal of collective bargaining rights for public employees. And there was the sit-in at the Capitol. Part of that whole attack on workers and was directed at immigrants too, and that included a repeal of tuition equity and a bill that was introduced that would have been an Arizona copycat bill of like the show me your papers bill in Arizona. And again, that was something at that time that got moved in different states, and so we joined with labor union allies on May 1st, which ever since 2006 has now become a tradition with mass protests. And that was protest. And at that point, we had also made that deep commitment, to continue to use the general strike. But I think the context and the threat of things even escalating further were helpful in defeating the Arizona copycat bill. And last year in the state capitol, there was a Day Without Latinos and Immigrants organized in 11 days with tens of thousands of people throughout the state converging at the state capitol. And because of that, we were able to successfully defeat a so-called anti-sanctuary city bill, which would have done very similar to 287G that would have, you know, turned local law enforcement into an arm of immigration. And so that was defeated because it had such a huge, economic pressure, including into a sector that is very much a part of the Republican Party base, which is the dairy industry and agriculture. And because of the leadership on the part of immigrant workers and their families and supporters, it brought others along, which then created the political pressure to defeat that bill from being signed into law when it otherwise would have been. And so we realized that like what's happened now is the start, and it's going to have to be more sustained and prolonged. But the strategy to go deeper into using our collective economic power through boycotts, through strikes, is critical under the Trump administration to defeat the immigration executive order and to push back against this broader anti-civil rights, anti-worker agenda.
I was just, one of the conversations that happens a lot around politics in this country is this sort of urban-rural split. But of course, a lot of the immigrant workers in this country are working on farms. They're working in rural communities that are otherwise really white. So I'd love to talk about organizing in rural parts of Wisconsin and how you can break down the divisions in those communities.
This is an area that is, I think where we saw that the biggest breakdown was that we were able to, really through social media and radio, and then just through local connections that we've made as we've built chapters. Last year's Day Without Latinos, we intentionally built chapters in the different cities, at least key cities where people came from around the state.
Right.
And we're able to use that as a foundation to quickly, in a faster way, respond to the current threat. And so I think that's been, it's been very, there's been a lot of self-organizing actually going on in numerous different workplaces, including the dairy farms. But one thing that has been very helpful for us is that we had also established a relationship at a different level with different employer associations. So we've been engaged in the Dairy Business Association over the years on different initiatives like the trying to secure driver's licenses in Wisconsin, which is something that's very important in rural areas when there's even less public transportation. And driving is a necessity, or more recently around communicating with DVA to coordinate communication with farmers about what was going on, what was it that people were responding to, clarifying that, and also figuring out ways that people could, the farmers could support their workforce in advocating for against these bad bills, because for the dairy industry, which is a very key industry for Wisconsin, if you eliminate the immigrant workforce, that whole industry collapses, and with it is a whole domino effect on a whole series of jobs that would also drop. The floor would fall out on them too if you actually did create policies of mass deportation that targeted immigrant workers, so in the absence of immigration reform, these policies will only drive people into greater levels of poverty. And so the fact that it's been immigrant worker led, but I would say that through people, through radio, through Facebook, there has been a high level of self-organization, but having those different levels of communication have been critical to make sure that things move in a productive direction so that, for example, in farms where it's not like a factory where you can just stop the work but, the consequences would be, you'd actually kill cows people were able to coordinate, making sure there's a skeleton crew available, and farmers in turn also appreciating the, from the point of view of the immigrant workers, what was really at stake, were an important voice within the Republican Party to, call for the defeat of these bad bills. So I think we believe that there needs to be, deeper engagement, and the strengthening of networks. So that we can sustain similar actions. And, there's just also a high level of appreciation for the, the sacrifices that people have been doing, and even just the level of self-organizing that people have been doing for a period of time now. Volsis has always been there to support people in the buildup, in the aftermath around any cases of retaliation. And we have sent delegations to meet with employers. We have given people a chance to understand and take back people if there were any dismissals or any kind of retaliation, to make good on that.
Yeah.
And to not go public. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we do believe those there should be a public accountability of businesses that are not supporting their workforce, especially when the workforce is so critical
right.
to their well-being, to not stand with them. And so that's been by and large, we have had a strong record of success. And I do believe the organizational support for workers and their families should be something that accompanies all of these calls to action. And it's important that that's a commitment that's made there,
yeah.
ideally in any city, that there's that level of support for people, to back people up.
Yeah. Yeah. That leads me actually right into another question I was going to ask, which is that obviously deportations and attacks on immigrants, as we've just been talking about, are not a new problem, but a lot of people, because Trump has been so vile, really are waking up to the scale of this problem now. And so how would you say that people who are not in danger of being deported can get involved and support immigrant workers in their communities?
I think one key strategy for us right now is to, we have an online petition directed to Sheriff Clark that we're asking people to sign that says that we do not want, basically Milwaukee County to become Maricopa County. We do not want, we stand with the people of Milwaukee County to not bring this program. And that's important for us because, as people have said, you don't want to normalize these politics. And so yeah. it is a frontline struggle. Sheriff Clark is someone of equal temperament to Trump or Arpaio.
Yeah.
They're very ego driven, have really become a mouthpiece in the case of Clark. Despite being African American, he's become a mouthpiece for white nationalists and all kinds of, characterizing African Americans as ISIS, calling them subhuman. We in Milwaukee, city of Milwaukee, the majority of the residents are African Americans.
Right.
He's characterized for many years now immigrants as basically all of them targets for deportation, which again flies in the face of immigration law because to be undocumented it's civil infraction.
Yeah.
And so, he's someone who has, been very, his whole, he's become a national figure as part of these kind of politics. So we think it's important that, we ask for people's help with that. We ask for people, this is kind of at a national level to help, make contributions to VOCES because one of our goals is to engage similar-minded organizations who want to go deeper on the economic strategy, using that as a way to fight back against the policies that are being implemented or they're trying to implement through the Trump administration. And lastly, I feel like where there are local coalitions that can be formed in the buildup to May 1st. May 1st will be a not just a national protest, but another national day of strike. And I know there's already conversations going on with larger networks to see if, the potential of folding in this action under a broader platform with different groups, climate change, women's, immigrant rights, that stuff is in process, but in terms of immigrant rights, that is certainly a day that has been set. And so I think at any coalition level, if there's ways to support immigrant rights organizing that is tied around preventing like some of this local stuff from getting implemented,
right.
such as, we should know, does your local sheriff want to implement this 287G program or not? Most of the National Association of Chiefs of Police are totally against it. They've already kind of said so.
Interesting.
But it's good to have those policies to, as a community, to come out and say, we don't want that in our community.
Yeah.
And we want you to take a public stance and say, as a local law enforcement official, we do not want 287G. And the more people that stand up and say that, the more marginal those politics become. And so I think that's an important, like a lot of the resistance is local in nature, especially around immigration work. And so having a coalition of different people is very important. And I think in the building up to May 1st, in whatever way people can contribute to helping at a local level, that, and I think just, you know, getting more informed around the facts versus the fiction tied to immigration, is just always good to have many different messengers carry that message. And we do need to do the rest of it, which means we do need to hold our elected officials accountable to not being enablers to the kind of extremism, really far right politics that are aggressively trying to be shoved down our throats. And I think there's very inspirational moment, and certainly in terms of the immigrant rights movement, having the voice of people who have the right to vote, who are comfortable going to town halls and picking up the phone. That's something that immigrants are not as comfortable with. And so it actually is a very important way to stand in solidarity with newer immigrants to the United States.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. And how can people keep up with you and your organization?
We ask people to like our Facebook, which is Voces de la Frontera, and our lesser known Voces de la Frontera Action, which is our C4 arm, which allows us to have a voice in elections and do more advocacy for or against bad law.
Yeah.
And that way you will definitely, people are not on Facebook. We have a website called, where the initials VDLF.org. And then people can like click there, and then also you'll be able to get updates as well through email.
Then on February 16th, in an event largely organized via viral social media posts, cities around the country saw similar strikes, with many small business owners taking part in closing their businesses as part of the strike. I was in Danbury, Connecticut for the strike and rally and spoke with one of its organizers.
Wilson Hernandez, a resident of Danbury for 16 years.
Yeah, and you own a restaurant that is closed today, right?
I own a restaurant and the restaurant's closed today, yes.
So tell me how this all came together. We're standing outside of Danbury City Hall with a few hundred people.
Well, people decide to express their fears, their anxiety. People are afraid of things that are happening around the country. And we want to express, as I said, our fear by letting the community leaders know, the community authorities, that we are here and we want to work with the police department, with our mayor, in order to have a peaceful city, to celebrate our diversity. This is a multicultural city, and I think we should celebrate that instead of spreading fear for these people.
Yeah. How quickly did all of this get organized?
Well, up to yesterday, we didn't think we were going to do this.
Oh, really?
But today, we start hearing people, we should do something, we should demonstrate our strength, we should demonstrate how united we are. So we decided to ask the mayor for permission to be here today.
Yeah. How many businesses are closed here today?
I would say 40 businesses. You know, more and more people have decided on the last minute that they should close because they saw that this was a serious action.
And this is happening around the country.
Well, it is happening around the country. I don't know if anywhere else in the country people are getting together as we are here. Yeah. But, you know, the police department is cooperating with us. They are aware of our I would say concerns.
Yeah.
And they're working with us. You know, we should thank them.
Yeah. And Justin was telling me that this particular date has some significance here in Danbury too, right?
Well, not precisely this day, but 9 years ago, in a freezing February 6th, we standed here, I think, 3,500 people. Yeah. That's what the, at that time, the News Times said that counted 3,500 people. It's a lot of people. I don't know how many people are going to be here today. And that day, we were protesting against the city becoming partners with ICE. They did it while they were having a meeting upstairs. We were here expressing our feelings.
And what happened?
Well, finally, the city decided to get in partnership with ICE. You know, the city, I don't know how many people they really found here that were criminals. You know, we should not confuse immigrants with criminals. Criminals are criminals, no matter what color of skin they have or what they do or where they come from.
Around. Every time I look around, there's more people.
More people, amazing. Yes, yes. In a few minutes, we'll start just, I would say, saying a few words and expressing our feelings. That's what's going to happen.
Great.
Everything is going to be peaceful, for sure.
Interviews for Resistance is a project of Sarah Jaffe with assistance from Laura Faillebois and support from the Nation Institute. You can find more information at necessarytrouble.org. Thanks for listening.